Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. I personally take Super Beets when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beets gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeets.com. That's IntelligentBeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to tackle the subject of osteoporosis and bone fractures, but from a slightly different standpoint. You know, we often talk about this or that or the other remedy for osteoporosis, and we will get into that during this podcast, but what attracted me to this book, is entitled The No-Nonsense Bone Health Guide, and it's written by a doctor. She's a chiropractic physician, Dr. Lanny Simpson, who's our guest today. But she also bears an interesting additional set of initials after her chiropractic DC. She's Dr. Lanny Simpson, DC CCD. And this is actually a credential that I have never come across. And what I realized is that Dr. Simpson is certified as a densitometrist, someone who knows a heck of a lot about bone densitometry. And there are a lot of misconceptions about osteoporosis, and she's here to clear up many of them for you, as she does in her book, The No-Nonsense Bone Health Guide. So without further ado, here's Dr. Lanny Simpson. It's a pleasure having you on the program, Dr. Simpson.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, first of all, explain to our listeners, what is a CCD? I've never come across a CCD. I didn't realize there was such a thing.
Well, see, a densitometrist is a clinical densitometrist means that, well, densitometry in and of itself is a subspecialty of radiology. So it's still in the radiology arena. And one can study and take the test and do weekend courses and so forth on densitometry. And they're very informative. In fact, prior to me becoming a CCD and studying and actually taking the test for it, I have been reading bone density since the 90s. I had my own osteoporosis center, and I had my own DEXA machine, you know, for the spine and the hip. And I really thought I knew how to read these. And it wasn't until I really studied bone densitometry, and there are a couple books on the topic, that I really realized I was not really parsing out, you know, the finer details, if you will, the nuances. And what I can tell you is very few people who are writing reports today in this country have even been trained in densitometry. And I think it's kind of similar to years ago when we were looking at mammography. Basically, any MD could say, I read mammograms, and then finally, we realized we really weren't getting very good results. We're getting too many false positives, false negatives, and then they had to be trained in that. And so, the same thing's going on here. And the International Society of Bone Densitometry is trying to make a difference, saying, you know what, we really need these people to be trained. Just anyone cannot read these bone density tests.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is that this is, I've been around in practice since the 1980s, from the dawning awareness of osteoporosis. Prior to that, you know, you virtually couldn't get arrested for osteoporosis. Women would, commonly go into their later years, break a hip, or become terribly hunchbacked. And this was an undiscovered problem. And then with the advent of testing and new drugs for treatment, all of a sudden we've gone to the other extreme where virtually every woman is extremely concerned about their bone density. I see many patients who are absolutely devastated after getting a DEXA scan and being told that they have a bone loss and that they're potentially at high risk for fracture, they must take a drug. So clearly, there's got to be a happy medium here in terms of properly interpreting these tests. So, tell us, first of all, you know, what does the test entail? What are the pluses of the test, and what are the limitations of the test?
Okay, so the test entails, it is a bit of radiation. It's a very small amount of radiation. And when a patient goes in to have a bone density test, they lay on a table, and then there's an arm that goes, scans their body for their hip and their lumbar spine. What's really important is that the technicians should also be credentialed and trained. We think when we go in to have an x-ray, we know that the technician is trained, and we know that the radiologist is trained to read those. But again, here we have another the same situation with the technicians. They are not necessarily trained. And it's important because when the technician has to, number one, understand anatomy to the extent that they are putting the patient on the table correctly. For the hip, to get a proper hip reading, you have to internally rotate the hip 15 degrees. But then also, they can pull up the images on a screen. And in the lumbar region, as you know, there are a lot of anomalies, particularly at the transitional area, meaning it's the thoracic area or the mid-back area is going into the lumbar area. There's a number of anomalies that can occur there, and there's a number of anomalies that can occur in the lower lumbar going into the sacral area. So they have to have
In other words, what you're saying is different twists and turns of anatomy. You know, some people have a distorted anatomy. Some people, you know, a little bit lean into one side, scoliosis, kyphosis, you know, et cetera. Then the positioning, the knowledge of how to do the test can actually affect the results. So what?
Well, and I'll give you a really good example. Yeah. Somebody with a significant scoliosis, say they have maybe a 40-degree curvature.
Yep.
They should never be. Their lumbar spine shouldn't even be used because it's a projection where you're getting it's a P to A projection, meaning it comes from the back of the spine to the front of the spine in terms of the bone density testing itself. And if that's not if the spine is curved, you're going to get other parts of is rotated, which it is in scoliosis, you're going to get more bone involved in that.
So you're getting like a false reassurance that there's
absolutely
good. Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. And I see this done all the time. And, I say that this is not diagnostic. So therefore, then I always want two, by the way, I always want two areas that are diagnostic, meaning if I can't use the lumbar spine, then I want the forearm and I want the hip. And if I can't use the hip because maybe they've had two hip replacements, and I want the spine and the forearm if I can get that.
Right. So what you're saying in so many words is that these tests are, to some extent, not that reliable. And you actually, in the book, you cite examples where you could go in one day for a test at the same center and go back again next week and discover that, lo and behold, you've lost 10% of your bone density, or perhaps you've gained 10% bone density. How could that be?
That's exactly what happened to me back in the 90s. And as you know, we didn't even hear much about this condition until the early 90s when the machines became popular. They were companies themselves were putting them in doctors' offices. So all of a sudden, we're hearing about osteoporosis and osteopenia, which, by the way, that term osteopenia was never meant to be a diagnosis. So all of a sudden it became a huge issue. So I myself went and had a bone density test at a friend's office in San Francisco, and I had close to osteoporosis, and so I had osteopenia, and here I was in my 40s, and I was totally frightened. I didn't know what that meant. So then I thought, well, if this is gold standard, I think I'll go over to UCSF in San Francisco and get another one the same week. And it was 10% different.
Oh,
so me now in the category of osteoporosis, and that was my first indication that these could be incorrect. But that said, and let me just reel this in a little bit, because I also want listeners to understand that bone density is an incredible tool. What I'm arguing for, it needs to be used better than it's being used now, and professionally, and that's not what's happening.
Right.
So let me just give you an example. If I had, even if it's 10% different, it'll still put me in a ballpark of maybe something to be concerned about. Where that issue of being 5-10% different, even on the same machine, comes really into play when we're doing a comparison test. Because when someone has a report that says they have lost 5% bone mass, that is a super trigger, if you will, for medications.
Right.
Maybe the hip just wasn't rotated right.
Yeah. Well, so in other words, what you're, and I see this a lot too, you know, you mentioned a couple of things. First of all, osteopenia, you say, is not a disease. It's kind of a natural physiologic condition. Your bone does thin as you get older. But a lot of doctors, when they see osteopenia, they go, well, you know, just in case I'm going to prescribe Boniva, Actonel, Fosamax, you know, Forteo, you name it. I mean, we've got a whole arsenal of medications now, which I'll have you comment on a little bit in a little while. But, you know, are we seeing women getting, and men in some cases, getting medications unnecessarily, willy-nilly?
Oh, I totally agree. But let me unpack what you just said a little bit with
sure.
the osteopenia. Now, let's just look at what these numbers mean. We have normal bone mass, and this is by the World Health Organization, is considered up to 12% lower than an average 30-year-old. So they give us 12%. Now, that 12%, before they call it anything, okay, they give us that 12% thinking that, okay, some people have smaller bones, blah, 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 we'll catch all those people by giving... saying up to 12% less than an average 30-year-old, then we're going to catch those people. And then a negative 1.1 to a negative 2.4, and keep in mind each one of these points is 12%.
This is the so-called T-score, the T-score that...
The T-score, yeah.
Yeah.
So a negative 1 to a negative 2.4 is osteopenia or low bone mass, depending on who's writing the report. I say low bone mass. And osteoporosis is defined as... a negative 2.5 or 30% less bone mass than an average 30-year-old. Now, let me just give you a couple of thoughts here. Let's say, for instance, somebody had a bone density test and was negative 1.2, and they were 48 years old, a woman, and then she comes back in 2 years, or even 58-year-old woman, comes back in 2 years and it's negative 2.4. She's still in that low bone density range, but I do care that she's mm-hmm. lost that much bone. And I'm talking
it's like
about
velocity. It's the velocity of the decrease, right?
And if it's beyond the least significant change.
Yeah.
So least significant change is a number that we can statistically rely on, and basically it's usually about 4% depending on the facility. Mm-hmm. In our facility, it's actually 2.5%, but that's because we really, you know...
Wait, least significant, in other words, that's just the wobble that you might see, you know, like a standard deviation, or not standard deviation, but just the wobble in inherent in the test's imprecision, right?
And this is true in any testing, and people, you know, should understand that. I don't, and you know that, my testing for hormones can be a crapshoot. You have to, you know, look at symptoms, you have to look at a whole bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to talk about today, too, because it's not just the you know, bone density testing is not the
right.
holy grail in terms of thinking about whether or not our bones are healthy. It's part of the picture. It's a significant part of the picture. So let me just toss a couple other things out. If you have if somebody has a negative 3, negative 3.5, negative 4.
That's considered bad. That's considered bad.
That's good. That's exactly right. That's not good. So... And what I also see is that when people have these kinds of numbers, and what I say to doctors when I'm teaching them how to think about this, is that if you have somebody with a negative 3.5, and I'm, you know, it could be lower, it could be higher, whatever, you know, they better be telling you a big fat story. And let's say it's a woman. Let's say that the woman's 5'6", so she's not the tiniest, all right? She's not 5 feet tall with, you know, weighing 85 pounds, all right? She's a regular-sized person, 5'6". She has a negative 3.5. And she better be telling you a story. In other words, did she have an eating disorder
mm-hmm.
when she was a mm-hmm. teenager? A drinking problem, smoking? Because my osteoporosis...
Or having been on steroids, perhaps for some medical condition.
Exactly. You have to do good work on something. So my osteoporosis, and I do have it today, I'm 65, I'm 5'6", I weigh 115 pounds wet. And when I... was a teenager, when I was supposed to be building up my bank account of bone, I did not build a good bank account of bone. So by the time I was 18, I had 80% of our bone mass was laid down by then. I was smoking cigarettes. I was doing a lot of bad things.
Poor quality diet, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one bone density test, if I only have one bone density test, it does not mean, and this is a huge thing for people to get, it does not mean that active bone loss is occurring.
Okay.
Maybe they never gained it.
Right.
Maybe there's a variety of things. But if I've got a negative 4 sitting in front of me,
yeah.
chances are that is what's going on. But
right.
Again, you have to know this topic. Yeah.
So, wait, to paraphrase, I mean, I actually sometimes give people this analogy. I said, you know, I'm in New York, and I said, look, if you want to plan a trip to Philadelphia and you want to know, you know, you're on a cell phone to tell people when you're going to arrive, you need to know two things. You need to know, number one, your position on the way to Philadelphia. Like if you're halfway there, okay, that's equivalent to, you know, a T-score tells you where you are. But you also need to know, is if there a lot of traffic, are you going slow, are you going fast on the superhighway? That'll also tell you how fast you'll reach your destination. In this case, the destination is risk of bone fracture. So that what you're saying is you need to do several of these things to plot a line. Or alternatively, I guess there's some other tests that can be used to pinpoint the rate of bone loss. I sometimes talk about the NTX test or the T-peptide test as a urine test, a way of determining if a bone is turning over rapidly. Is that a useful tool to add to your predictive arsenal?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and it depends. It depends on the history of somebody. You know, I have some people, I had a patient in last week, 7 fractures, her bone density was normal. That's rare, by the way. Because a lot of times I will hear alternative doctors say, oh, you know, people have normal bone density, they're drinking too much milk, they're breaking bone. That's nonsense. The classic, mostly, what I see is people with very low bone density breaking bones. Now, I'll pose this to you. Let's say we have 2 people, same size, same bone size, same everything, -3.5. One's fracturing, the other one is not. What's the mm-hmm. difference?
Yeah.
Well, the quality of the bone. So that let's say one of them is smoking cigarettes. We can pretty well, in a pack a day for the last 7 years, given that the bone gets rid of old bone, lays down new bone, it can't lay down good new bone when you're smoking, they're not going to have a good quality bone. They could be fracturing now.
So I'm going to coin a phrase here. Density is not destiny, all right? Because your density
is not destiny, but it's a big part of the picture.
It's a big part of it. So you can't ignore it. But like you say, there could be 2 comparable people, same bone density, and one gets a fracture and one does not, because the density does not always correspond to the resilience of the bone. There's something about the quality
That's
of the
right.
bone, live, properly remodeling bone that has flexibility and suppleness and is not brittle. That is a quality of bone that so far we have not really come up with tests to properly ascertain, right?
Well, there's a new test. Well, I can kind of get an idea. Now, we have the
from history.
History, yes. If somebody has malabsorption, I can kind of gather that. We can talk more about that in a bit. But we also have the trabecular bone score that's getting a little bit more attention.
Tell us about that.
Degradation inside the bone, and also a CT scan of L1 and L2, which is they can do a T-score. I don't usually do that because it's too much radiation. But you could get a better idea mm-hmm. of the inside structure of the bone.
So you're saying they're doing research potentially in the future on better tests to analyze the quality of bone, not merely the density.
Right, and even now, the International Society of Bone Densitometry and National Osteoporosis Foundation, they're putting out a different diagnosis that includes bone density. In other words, bone density is the biggest predictor, and still is, of future fracture risk. I mean, that's just a fact. If you have a -3.5 or 4, the prediction of getting a fracture, and then say the person's 70 years old, because being the other age is a huge predictor, too. Those two things alone are huge.
Mm-hmm.
So as we age, no matter what we do, that quality is going to go down. But what I say in my book is that we can build bone quality, bone health, and I say bone health, at any age. It's harder to build density, but I see so many people who have gastrointestinal problems, who are on proton pump inhibitors, things that inhibit the acid into the stomach, people who are not, a lot of the older folks are not getting even sufficient protein. We know bones need protein. So the basic things that I consider the core program for anybody in terms of osteoporosis and bone health should be nutrition, gastrointestinal health, and exercise. But that's mm-hmm. not what's being done. Usually it's drugs, and then there's sort of here, take Tums, and they're still saying that.
Right.
And eat a good diet, whatever that means.
Drink tons of milk, take lots of calcium. Yeah, that whole thing.
So if somebody has, let's just go to the -4 for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be pulling out a lot of stops on that case. I'm going to be warning that, and probably actually the CTX is a better test, I think, these days than the MTX. You can do the MTX in blood and urine, but but I usually will do two. And sometimes I'll do the P1NP, which is another bone mark. I do the osteocalcin. I mean, those are the basics. I will do a 24-hour urine. And I do that in a variety of ways, depending on who's in front of me. Sometimes I don't have them go off calcium first just to see what it is, and then if they're dumping out calcium, because the kidneys, of course, as you know, are just a huge, can be a huge component. So what I'm about, if I got a negative 4, I'm looking to see whether or not they're actively losing bone. And as you know, I mean, that's the big issue. Is somebody stable, or are they actively losing?
Could you just back up a little and talk about what's called the FRAX score, because some doctors employ that, and that's a way that you can adjust a little bit for the bone density and plow in some other factors that can help better reflect your true risk of fracture.
Well, yeah, let me tell you, I did a whole chapter on this in my book. So there are two different tools out there, and we're coming up more and more with these 10-year, you know, predictors, whether it's for heart, you know, heart attacks, or now we're looking at, this is a 10-year potential, probable possibility that someone could get a fracture. So you answer the questions. You don't even need to have a bone density to do this. But by the way, if you don't enter a bone density, which is, you can only put in either the total hip or the neck of the femur. You can't include the spine, at least not on the FRAX. It will always come back as a higher risk, always, because they're just assuming now that they, okay, they've got, you know, lower bone density, so they don't want to miss them.
Yeah.
So here's
well, that's not so good. That sort of stacks the deck in favor. A lot of these things seem to stack the deck in favor of a prescription, right? I mean,
well,
that's,
you know,
funneling people towards a medical solution.
Well, that's a yes and a no, and so I really think about this a lot. So let's say, the FRAX, again, if it's used properly, and I really want to use that term properly, does give us information. It'll, like, for instance, if somebody has rheumatoid arthritis, or if they've been using steroids, those are huge in terms of bone. But what it doesn't, or if you've had a fracture, an osteoporosis-related fracture in particular, but in the FRAX, what they ask, let me give you an example. I had someone come in to me 3 weeks ago who was absolutely scared to death because her FRAX came back that she had a 55% chance of fracturing anywhere in her body and a 15% chance of fracturing in her hip.
Well, that sounds like that's almost inevitable that she's going to have a fracture when you get here.
Exactly.
Right.
And so that, along with the bone density, which was low, but she was 58, she had a negative 3, and you know, she had a fracture. But it doesn't say, when did you have the fracture? What kind of fracture? It doesn't ask detailed questions. I ask detailed questions when I talk to you. So here's what happened. So she answered yes to fracture. She had stubbed her toe 15 years earlier, broke a toe.
Right.
I eliminated that. That's not a fracture.
Yeah, that's not a not a pathological. There's a difference between like a, I mean, I have a fracture. I'm sitting here. I broke my hip falling off a bicycle. So, you know, that's, but that doesn't mean I have osteoporosis.
No, but it did. Okay, well, let me go to that one in a minute. So anyway, so then she answered yes to her mother had had a hip fracture. Her mother had fallen down two flights of stairs at 102.
Well,
and she answered yes to that. And then she answered yes to another one, which was steroids. She'd done them for a month 20 years ago. I got rid of all those. By the time she left, she had like a 10% chance of getting any fracture and a 2% of hip fracture, and even by FRAX standards, that's not even a conversation in terms of medication.
So it all goes to show you, I mean, it's a formula, you know, GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. You have to be discerning about the information you enter in, because I've taken cardiovascular tests, which, you know, at the end of the test, it says call 911, you know, because you're about to have an MI, and, you know, and I'm very fit, and they just, you know, my father had a heart attack early, and okay, fine, you know, the certain factors weigh too heavily in these questionnaires. But anyway, FRAX is, by the way, it's on line. It's a formula that you can use. It's a plug-in. You can take your numbers and you can get a better idea of your risk. So let me ask you this. Hang on one second. Let me ask you to pause for a second, because what we do is we divide these podcasts into two parts. And this is a logical break point. So what we're going to do is we will break. We'll ask our listeners to rejoin us for part two. Pause briefly, and we'll rejoin our guest, Dr. Lanny Simpson, on the subject of her new book, No Nonsense Bone Health Guide, The Truth About Density Testing, Osteoporosis Drugs, and Building Bone Quality at Any Age. We'll be right back.